Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to a very special edition of HIAC Talk Radio. I am your host, Dean Dixon. With me, as always, is Dan Law. How are you doing tonight, Dan?
I'm not bored.
Okay.
I'm not bored, in reference to last night. No, I'm doing well. I got my wheels back, so I can go from place to place. Very nice.
That's always a good thing, getting your car back. Now
I got here on time.
You did. You certainly did, and I'm very thankful for that. Now, Dan, tonight we have a very special guest. We have Mel Zarek. She wrote an e-booklet on the seeds to patient wisdom. The seeds of patient wisdom.
Patient wisdom. That's okay. You got one word wrong. You're fired.
And it's 12 tips to grow and thrive with therapy. So what I'd like to do right now is bring on Mel. And Mel, welcome to HIAC Talk Radio. How are you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm great, and I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, not a problem at all. I'm looking forward to this. Before we get into the 12 steps that you outlined in your e-booklet, I wanted to know a little bit about your qualifications, why you felt you were someone who could write this book.
Sure. Well, first of all, I was inspired to write the book because I was a patient myself in therapy. And in fact, that's what I believe qualified me for writing it. Most of the material that is out there on how to be a patient in therapy is written by doctors and therapists. And while all of that is good, I wrote this from the patient's chair. And it's really about what I learned in the process of going through therapy and how it made that work successfully for me.
Okay.
So
and,
I was inspired to give others some tips on what worked for me.
Okay, and I'm just looking over your very impressive resume here. You spent 25 years in you had 25 years of federal experience in designing, instructing, and administering employee and management development programs. The last 15 years of your federal career, you were a full-time management and organizational development consultant for the IRS, actually.
Yes.
And that was also executive coaching, leadership development, organization development, team development, and conflict resolution. So you definitely have the credentials and you also hold a master's degree, if I'm not mistaken. So
yes,
you,
correct.
And a
leadership coaching certificate, graduate coaching certificate for leaders from Georgetown University.
Oh, wow.
So definitely you have the credentials, something, and you went through the therapy. You wanted to give your... what's the word I'm looking for? Your not expertise, but your experience, and give that back to people.
Yeah.
Now,
I would, if you don't mind, I would like to make a disclaimer just so right out of the chute, so that your listeners are really clear about this. I am not a therapist,
mm-hmm.
and what I wrote about was really about what helped me as a patient to get the most out of my therapy. So I need to be really clear that what I wrote, what I talk about tonight, what's in my blog, is information that I'm sharing is no way intended to diagnose or cure or treat or prevent any kind of disease or disorder. It's really just tips, patient-to-patient tips, on how to get the most out of your money and your time in therapy and the kind of work that you need to do. So I just wanted to be clear about that on the front end.
Yeah, definitely on the front end. Take care of some house cleaning, so to say. Now, the first tip that you it seems kind of obvious, but the first tip is ask for help.
Yeah, it does seem kind of obvious. And I think some people are afraid to ask for help because they think that that is a vulnerability or exposing a weakness. In my mind, I say congratulations, because there is wisdom in that. You have wisdom and courage in noticing that you need help, and there's absolutely nothing wrong in asking for it. In fact, if you don't ask for it, you're not going to get much further with whatever pain you're experiencing.
So very obviously, ask for help. That's the first step. And then going along with that would be your next tip is find the best therapist possible.
Yeah. Some people who want help really don't know how to find it. And there are, I guess, easier ways to find it these days now with the internet and search engines and that sort of thing to find the kind of services that you need in your location. So I think it is a little bit easier today. My best advice, or the way I go about finding any specialist, is really to seek the opinion of someone that I know and trust and respect. So it could be your medical doctor, it could be your pastor, it might be a teacher or someone else in your life that you respect who you can confide in and say, you know, I'm struggling emotionally or mentally, I'm depressed, or I've got a lot of anxiety, I think I could use some help, and asking them who they might recommend. So I have to just tell you this, that when I was looking for a cardiologist, when I knew that I needed some attention in that, I gave my family doctor a list of the names of the cardiologists in my insurance plan. And I said, so there's like 3 pages of doctors' names, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I gave my family doctor that list and said, who are the top 2 or 3 people on this list do you know or would recommend? So that's one of the ways that I use to search for a specialist that I need. So I recommend that people seek the advice of those who they respect.
And I think the next one is a real important one. This is Dan, by the way. Hi, thanks.
Hi,
for
Dan.
Taking it. How you doing?
I'm good.
For taking the time. Good. And this one is very, and I take this one almost a little to heart. Tip 3 is take responsibility for your well-being, and I feel, and I'm one of those people, I put everybody else first before I think about me, and for a long time,
mm-hmm.
I didn't put my health in front of those decisions,
mm-hmm.
and just recently, I'm getting back on track, and I wanted you to go into that, tip number 3 for a little bit.
Sure, and I also think that this tip, take responsibility for your well-being, is kind of a chicken or the egg kind of a question, because
right.
It might really be number one. If you're looking for help, that is taking responsibility for your well-being. So giving that attention is really primary, saying, I'm
right.
important, I need help, and I'm the only one that can do anything about that.
Mm.
The follow-up to that, though, is that when you find a therapist and you start doing that work, it doesn't mean that you now have somebody who's going to fix your problems for you. It's your life, and no matter what kind of mess it's in, you can make it better, but only if you accept that it's your responsibility to do so. So So you have to do the heavy lifting. The therapist can help guide in that, but you still have to do the work. It's still your work. But there's also good news here. The good news is that the solutions and the healing that can come out of that work actually lie within you. And so a good therapist really just helps you understand more about what's hurting,
yeah,
and helps you to uncover your own wisdom. So I get chills when I think about that, because basically it is self-help, but it's using an expert catalyst to help you explore your own understanding and your own wisdom.
Now, going along with tip number three, take responsibility for your own well-being, is become fully engaged in it, which is tip number four. So how do you become, instead of a passive observer to your life, how do you become engaged in the therapy?
Well, you kind of have to take charge of it. If you approach it from a passive standpoint, saying, I'm going to the doctor and they'll tell me what to do, or I'm going to the doctor, to the therapist, and they'll have the answers for me, that's a waste of time and money. And quite frankly, you're the only one that can do anything about it. So going to the appointments and writing the checks is not going to make it happen for you.
Mm.
What you need to do, what I felt that I needed to do, was that I had to have a commitment, a desire, and an intention to get well, to heal whatever hurt I was experiencing. I was having a midlife crisis, and I was hurting. But I was the only one that really could do anything about it, and becoming engaged was a matter of taking full action, being present, inquiring, exposing my vulnerabilities, and following through on the additional work that I needed to do outside the office, outside the doctor's office.
And, wow, that's very enlightening.
well, it's
a lot of information to take in, so I'm just...
Yeah, sure. I tell you the truth, I was really inspired to write this because... First of all, it is hard work, and it's scary, but it's also worthwhile. The quality of life is always at stake. Sometimes your life is actually at stake when you need mental or emotional help.
Yeah.
But always, always, your quality of life is at stake. So when you look at the fact that this is the only life you've got, why not live it well?
Yeah, yeah. Don't bat it around like, tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm one of those. I don't want to take it into a session for me, but that's it's a problem that I think a lot of us feel like, just do it tomorrow, no big deal.
Well, there's one other piece that goes along with all of these things, and that is that therapy is expensive.
Yeah.
And because it's expensive and it takes time, you really want to get the most out of your money. The only way you can get the most out of your money is to be proactive in it. Sometimes, but I will say that sometimes in the very beginning, you're hurting just a little bit too much to see that. You might be in a bit of a fog.
Yeah.
And so it might take a couple of sessions for you to say, wow, okay, I've got a safe haven here. I'm safe. I can talk about what's really hurting me.
Yeah.
That takes me to number five.
Yeah, I was going to say, that takes us right into number five because, again, I think this is one of the more important things on there, and it's just number five, tackle your scariest issues, which is, I would think, and in my personal case, is one of the reasons why you don't want to deal with it in the first place.
Yes.
If you don't want to deal with the issue head on anyway.
Yes. And so... I actually think this is my favorite tip. I think this was one of my inspired moments when I wrote this, because tackling your scariest issues is really the way you're going to get the most out of therapy. If you don't want to, it is scary, and it takes wisdom and courage just to get to therapy.
Yeah.
And so since you've crossed that that important mark in the sand, you've used your wisdom and your courage to get there, dive into the deep end as soon as you can. So my recommendation is that you bring up the darkest, scariest things that you've never told anyone.
Oof.
And you know what they are.
Yeah.
They are the events or thoughts or feelings that you are either most ashamed of or most afraid of or don't even know how to talk about. So here's the way I suggest people handle that. I suggest that they make a private list of their own that says, these are the things that I would rather not talk about. Don't ask me to talk about this list.
Mm.
Then give that list to your therapist.
Mm.
And
Oof.
Say, these are the things that scare me the most. I need your help in confronting them. Because if you don't, the longer you stuff them away, the longer those scary things are buried, the longer they're going to haunt you. And they squeak out when you don't deal with them, when you don't confront them. They stay with you for a long time and squeak out in other moods and behaviors that you just can't explain, you know, ineffective. So I recommend that people dive in the deep end and know that they have a life preserver because they've got a good therapist in the other chair who's going to help them deal with it. That's what happened to me. And it worked. It took some time to get there, and it took some courage. But, you know, what other thing that you ultimately find out when you open the and look at those skeletons in the closet? They once you start talking about them with a qualified, competent professional, they often become paper dragons.
Mm.
Their power over you diminishes. It's really kind of remarkable because you've confronted them. You've confronted them, and you realize that they were things that you were holding on to that you needed some help in understanding.
That's really a powerful step, and I think if people can go into it, like you say to, you know, write that list, give it to the therapist, I think that would be probably one of the bigger breakthroughs that someone would have.
I think it is. It was a big breakthrough for me. And, you know, it actually did turn out, and I know other people's stories about this, that it turned out that the issue that they were so scared about really wasn't, first of all, the therapist can handle it. It's not scary to the therapist.
Yeah, that's why they're a therapist.
So you're with a competent individual who is your life preserver, who's not going to let you, it's not going to kill you in that session. In fact, it's going to help heal you.
Mm.
It's really, actually, it's really a turning point, I think.
And very powerful. Now, going into tip number 6, it's do your preparation. Again, this seems like something that should be obvious.
Yeah,
but
it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, but I think a lot of people, when they go through therapy, they just kind of show up.
Yes.
So your recommendation for tip number 6 is do your preparation. Just go into that a little bit for us.
Sure. You're right. It is a no-brainer, but people do often go to their sessions kind of in a daze or in a haze. It's like they go to the appointment without remembering that they only have 50 precious minutes. So what happens is they start talking about what happened yesterday or last week, and all of a sudden the time is up, and they haven't really dealt with anything. So I recommend that a day or two before so therapy is not something that, successful therapy is not something that just happens in the doctor's office. It happens before, during, and after your session, and all the time in between. That's why it is very powerful. So I recommend that people, a day or two before their appointment, that you think about, how am I going to use those 50 precious minutes? And my other recommendation along that line is don't chronicle, don't go in there with your therapist and say, on Monday I did this, on Tuesday I did that, last week I did this, and then, you know, 45 minutes are gone just by telling the doctor all the stuff that happened. What you need to use that time for is how that impacted you. What was the emotional impact and results for you of those events? So here's one thing that I include in my booklet is send your doctor an email that lists, that says, these are some of the events that have happened. I want to talk to you about how they've impacted me. So you can chronicle the events in an email to your doctor. It helps them prepare. So they can say, wow, Mel, you actually had a confrontation with your brother last week. So how are you feeling about that now? How did it go? I don't have to tell her all the details, or him, all the details about that event, because they already know it happened. I can talk about the emotional impact. That's how to get your 50 minutes worth.
Ooh. And it almost goes right into number 7 about do your homework, that even when you're out of a therapy session, you got to keep attacking the problem.
Yes. It's your work. No matter how you look at it, it's your work. So when I say do your homework, I'm really talking about the fact that your therapist is probably going to help you explore maybe some new behaviors. They might ask you to practice something like to stop or start something new. Whatever they're going to ask you to do is going to be uncomfortable for you.
Yeah.
And so my recommendation or my advice is do it anyway. Because if you...
Yeah.
Do it. No matter how uncomfortable it is, do it. Because if you stick with just what's comfortable, you're going to be stuck right where you are to begin with. It's really what you've been comfortable with that hasn't been working.
Mm-hmm.
So your therapist is going to give you some homework. And you need to do it. And you need to do it, in my opinion, you need to do it with a genuine, positive regard. If you do it just to check it off the list, you're going to sabotage your healing. It just is a waste of time and money. So I would say, on the homework part, I would say that's a good 75% of the work that you do. Your homework might be several things. It might be a practice of a new behavior. It might be to journal. It might be maybe your therapist is recommending, you know, Mel, I think you ought to write a letter that you don't mm-hmm. mail to that person who betrayed you and say all the things that you were feeling because of that betrayal. Now, you don't mail it, but I want you to write that letter.
Just to get it out.
Yeah, to get it out, to feel it, instead of burying it away. And that's often what releases the hold that hurt has on you. So that's just an example of what some homework might be like. There are all kinds of homework.
And that kind of... See, a lot of your book just kind of leads right to the next step. Tip number 8 is...
That was the point, Dean.
Well, yeah. But tip number 8 is be open to learning.
Yeah.
Just don't show up, basically. Actually learn about yourself, the situation, what's causing that pain. So what's that step like for a patient?
Well, one of the reasons I separate this as a separate one is because, we should be lifelong learners. But there is a point here that in our society, we are rewarded for what we know. So to not know is not cool. So we feel like we have to know things. The problem about knowing is that's a rather finite and, what's the word? It's kind of a finite way of being. Well, I already know this. I already know myself.
Right.
And And so it kind of stops our growth. What I like to do is distinguish knowing from learning. Learning is an ongoing process, and it's a process that is part of growth. So when I say be open to learning, I'm really saying you're not going to know it all. And so accept that. And not knowing what your pain is or what's causing it or why you're doing a certain thing is really the juice for exploration, the juice for learning. So I think we have to get comfortable with not knowing. Instead, looking at all of our experiences as what am I meant to learn from this? That's really a very powerful and, growth way of approaching any problem, any difficulty that we say. What am I meant to learn from this?
Again, I can only preface this by saying what Dean said. It goes right into the next one. Number nine, recognize resistance. And a lot of times, I guess it would be a matter of recognizing this resistance, but the way to recognize it is to ignore it. And I know ignoring it is not the answer, not the answer at all to that resistance.
Well, you're right. And one of the things that therapists do really effectively, and Malcolm Gladwell points this out in his book called Blink, one of their expertises is to help us look at our own behavior and help us understand what our habitual judgments and decisions are. And in doing so, they question us. They point out, well, Mel, you've just contradicted yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Or they might recommend that we take certain actions or practices. What happens when they do that, it triggers a defensive mood on our part. So we might say, it might sound like criticism. And what we end up doing is saying, well, let me explain really what I meant. So we try to explain more. Or
right.
when the therapist recommends that we do something, try something new, we go into talking about why that won't work or why that suggestion can't be done. Well, I can't do that because my schedule's full or whatever. Those are signs of resistance, and they keep us, they prevent us from hearing what is really being offered, and it'll keep us stuck right where we are. So what I like to encourage people to do is to listen with an open mind to what the therapist is suggesting and not take criticism or suggestions for change as being wrong. They're not
right.
trying to make us wrong. They're
right.
trying to make us aware. So I also encourage people to ask questions about, you know, what the therapist wants us to do or what they're recommending, but to ask questions from a position of clarity and understanding, not to question, really to stall or dispute or to argue why you can't do something. That's resistance. So if that shows up, if it shows up in that way, hey, that's a good thing to tackle. Right in front of your very eyes, you've got a piece of behavior, resistance, that's right there ready to work. It's like,
right.
Oh, okay. What's this trying to tell me? What am I going about here? So I think resistance is a helpful tool if we can recognize it.
Now, I think a lot of people, once they get into the process, once they start getting uncomfortable, they, their schedule becomes too hectic or they start making excuses. And tip number 10 is you got to show up.
Yep.
Because I think a lot of people, once it becomes difficult for them, they stop.
Yes, that's right. And so I love tip number 10 because it implies several things. It does imply showing up physically for the appointment. When you start to cancel appointments, I'm not just saying one that causes a conflict because you have to go out of town for work. I'm talking about more than once you're canceling an appointment.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're showing up late. both of those things are signs, perhaps signs of resistance, or that you're stepping into territory that's uncomfortable. So recognize that. The other thing is that it's rude to do that, and it's costly. If you're, most therapists will charge you for an appointment that you've missed. Or when you show up and you're 15 minutes late, you've only got 35 minutes now, not 50. So you're wasting time and money in doing that. In addition, when that starts to happen, your therapist is going to call attention. A good therapist will recognize that as a pattern and will call your attention to it. So there's one other element about showing up, and that means not just being in the seat physically. It really means being fully present with your attention. Good therapy and getting good results really requires mind, body, and heart being in the room and allowing that to take place. And allowing yourself to be vulnerable and engaged in the process. So it needs your full attention and participation. So if you're going to show up and doodle, you know, and look away,
why bother?
Why bother? But you know, some therapists will let you just sit there in silence, and that's what you're paying for. Or they'll say, "So how long are you going to sit here before you say something?"
At least he's honest.
yeah, and I really think this is my own opinion. Now I'm talking from the patient's chair here. I'm not a trainer of therapists or a specialist in that area, but a good therapist will call you on your bullshit. Excuse me.
Ooh.
A good therapist.
Saucy.
I'm sorry.
It's fine,
I meant
though.
To say BS.
It's all right.
But when you start BSing, they know it. And a good therapist will call you on it, will say, "Mel, how many times are you going to tell me that? You know, I know that you're stalling here." Not only that, but, you know, 30 minutes have gone by and we still haven't picked up that hot issue that you brought in last week. A good therapist will do that with you. And, I mean, I think that's wonderful. But I also think that that's the kind of thing they want you to become aware of, that they help you become aware of, so that when you're doing it, you can actually notice it in the moment and realize you're stalling or you're scared. And sometimes when you're scared, it's good to just sit there and tell your therapist, "I'm scared to death right now." That's a very powerful thing to say.
Right, which the therapist will know anyway. He'll already know.
Yes, and will help you have a safe haven and sit with your fear, which will dissipate.
And again, it brings us right next to number 11, which is trust the process, which I can only imagine if your therapist is telling you something and, you know, in your mind you're like, "That's not going to work. That
yeah.
can't happen that way." And I think that's another thing that's part of the problem.
Yeah. But and also, trusting the process means that psychotherapy, especially when we use that word psychotherapy, talk therapy, counseling, mental health therapy, it's gotten bad raps. And
yeah.
It's been made fun of. Or
I saw The Shrink last night. You know?
Yeah, I saw The Shrink last night, right. And, you know, it's made light of. And rarely, so we hear it either in a negative mode, or we hear about it as a joke.
Yeah.
Rarely we hear about its failures. People who say, "I tried that, it didn't work."
Yeah.
That's a bunch of bull or crap or whatever.
That's
and
okay.
Rarely do we hear about the individual or family counseling that works, and it's working all the time for a lot of people. So I really like to let people know that, number one, it takes some time. Just like your physical health, physical fitness, you don't become physically fit after one session at the gym. You have to work out.
Yeah.
It takes time. It might take 3 months or 6 months to get your body in shape. Well, that's true with therapy, too. It's going to take time. You won't get instant results. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you get breakthroughs, and those are wonderful.
Mm.
But it takes time. And so I like to encourage people to give it the time to take hold and give it the time to trust the process that it will. If you feel safe with your therapist and they're working you hard and you're working hard, it'll work. It'll happen for you.
Now, I think maybe one of the hardest parts for someone to understand is when the time has come to say goodbye to your therapist. And that's what tip number 12 is.
Yeah.
Is know when you're finished.
Know when you're finished. And some of that happens on the front end. When you begin the therapy process, you and your therapist are going to say, what are we working on and what goals are we trying to achieve? And the therapist will help develop a treatment plan. But one of the things that happens, and so there will be a long period of time, can be a long period of time that'll take. One of the things that happens is that you fall in love with your therapist. And I don't mean that romantically. I mean this person becomes the one and only person that you can talk to in that way in the whole world. And so that person becomes really endeared to you. And it can to have someone listen to you so deeply and with such caring can be addictive, can be habit-forming. So you need to know when you're done. And one of the ways that it happened for me, I wondered about that. Sometimes talking about it on the front end says, you know, how will we know when we've accomplished what I need to accomplish? So discussing that on the front end can help. The other ways that it shows up is when you start to realize that you wonder how you're going to say goodbye to this person who's been so close to you,
yeah,
and knows you so well.
Yeah.
That's how it happened for me. I started to wonder, how will I ever say goodbye to this individual who's helped me so much? And so that's paying attention to that chatter in your head is a signal that if you think it's nearing time to end, you probably are right. And so you should bring it up in your session. Sometimes it'll come from the therapist who says, you know, I don't think we need to meet every 2 weeks. Why don't we touch base once a month for just the next 2 months or so? So the therapist will see that you've reached a level of momentum and work and stability that you can stretch that out and begin to close out your process.
Right. I mean, my only thing was, other than the therapist saying something, and when will you know that it's working, I can leave, or, you know, I'm falling backwards, I don't need to do this, I can't do this anymore?
Oh, you mean I can't go on with this process?
Yeah.
Well, sometimes your money runs out.
Well, yeah, other than
I just stuck with that.
Yeah, I hear
well,
that.
and sometimes you need a break from the process.
Mm.
In fact, I've been in therapy on two occasions in my life, and in one of those occasions, the therapist knew that I needed to take a break. And so
Okay. We
stopped for a while. I was just worn out because I had been working so hard on it. I was having breakthroughs, and I was feeling better, but I just really needed a breather. So
right.
The therapist and you can do that. Also, sometimes you're finished when you just don't want to work anymore.
Right, okay.
And then you have to accept responsibility for the rest of your healing or for living with whatever hurt you're carrying forward.
Right.
So I think pretty much the therapist will also say, seems like we're not getting anywhere these days. And if they don't fire you as a patient, they might say, Mel, why don't you call me when you're ready to work on this?
Yeah.
But that's not really when you're finished. When you're finished, you know, when you're starting to worry about saying goodbye, you've done your work.
Gotcha.
You've done your work.
You've done all that you can do, and so is your therapist.
Yeah, and you're in a place of well-being. You can sense that you're in a place of well-being. That's what I mean by being completely finished with the therapy process. So,
I think, and it really brings us to the conclusion, which is pretty simple, when you trust it, trust the steps, or trust the therapy in general, therapy works.
It does. And we're the key to it. The patient is the key to it. So, I mean, that's the little pamphlet of advice that I was inspired to write. I would like to let your listeners know that I am offering a free digital copy of that booklet for anybody who wants a copy that mentions this radio interview. I'd be happy to send them a digital copy of that booklet.
Hey, our first giveaway.
Yeah, a giveaway.
Yeah. Hey, that's true.
So let me give you the information that we needed for that.
Oh, go for it. Go right into it.
Okay. If your listeners would mention this radio interview and write to me at patientwisdom, all one word, patientwisdom@melzarek.com. MelZarek.com. I will send a free digital copy of the entire booklet to them. I also expanded on some of my tips from the booklet and beyond those 12 tips in a blog called Patient Wisdom, and that the address for that is patientwisdom.wordpress.com. And there are like 9 or 10 articles on there. I'm about to add a couple new ones that go beyond some of the discussions that we've had on these 12 tips.
Okay.
And
so
of course, I welcome anyone's feedback and comments or questions. They can send that to patientwisdom@melzarek.com or to mel@melzarek.com, to my email address.
Okay, so that pretty much wraps it up. Is there anything else you wanted to get across to our listeners out there?
Well, I would say if you're thinking about getting therapy, do it. Take the plunge. Get help. It's worth it. And I would encourage people to trust the wisdom and the courage that they have inside to live a life in a state of wellness.
That's really this entire interview has been a really powerful one.
Fantastic.
A lot of wisdom has been given to the listeners. Mel, I just want to thank you so much for coming on. This 45 minutes. Really went by very quickly. And,
yeah, I did not expect that.
Yeah, but I just want to thank you. And,
oh, you're very welcome.
I wanted to...
go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off. I was just saying, I don't know how to pose a question. When you wrote this, I mean, was it a sense of, like, helping accomplishment inside, mentally, with therapy, or just something you needed to get out because... It helped you so much, you just wanted to spread that word.
Yeah, it was more the latter. Actually, the years ago when I was in therapy, I actually knew I wanted to write about my experience, but I didn't really have quite the angle. And I just didn't know what that was about. Quite frankly, this came out of me like a bolt of inspiration. I picked up the pen and started writing it, and I said, wow, where did this come from? and it really came from hearing other people say, you know, I've just You know, if I could see that they needed help, and I'd say, well, have you gotten counseling? Oh, that's a bunch of crap. I don't need that. And so hearing that from some people who I knew were distressed or who were, you know, who were hurting, I realized that people are afraid of it. It's gotten a bad rap. And I knew that it worked. So I also knew that I was the one who helped make it work by finding good therapists and by doing the work, doing the heavy lifting.
Right.
So I really was compelled to share that. That was my purpose in writing, and it kind of came out of me.
Well, have you ever, one last thing, Dean, I'm sorry, have you ever had feedback, or do you get feedback still to this day?
Yeah, I do. I've been to the APA convention in Washington, D.C., and I handed out copies for people to get, a free digital copy. I gave them a postcard, just like your listeners could write to that address and get a free digital copy. I did that there. I've had therapists actually buy it or get it and put copies in their waiting room.
Oh, nice, nice.
Because that is, and have told me that their patients said, wow, now I know what I want to work on with you for the next 3 weeks or the next 3 months or whatever. They said, I wish I had, you know, I'm glad I found this, and I wish I had had it sooner, because it encourages them to do the work.
Okay.
So I want to make it available to as many people as I can. So it is, the hard copy is available for purchase, and the digital copy is available for purchase, but I'm making a digital copy available free to any of your listeners who write to me.
And again, you can get that, I believe, patientwisdom@melzerich.com. Got it.
And my blog is always free, so that it needs a little updating right now, but that's patientwisdom.wordpress.com. So
please, WordPress.
There are lots of articles there already that go beyond
the
12 steps.
Go to it, folks.
Mel, it was, like I said, it was a wonderful discussion. Yeah, the pleasure is all ours. Thank you for agreeing to do this.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And
I love talking about it, and I hope that some of your listeners will find this beneficial for them as well.
I would hope so, too, because I think it's really something, like I said, I know it's kind of overused at this point, but it's really powerful to come in touch with your own well-being.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you have a great night, and again, thank you
okay.
so much for coming on.
Thanks, guys. It was great talking to you.
Absolutely.
Good night to everybody.
Have a good night.
Bye now.
Okay, everyone. That was Mel Zerich, who wrote a wonderful e-booklet.
It really is.
And she is, giving away a free copy. All you have to do is write her.
Our first giveaway.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's actually something really beneficial.
It really helpful, and even if it's just something to put your mind at ease, to even start, if you're having problems, like a lot of us probably do these days, to read this and at least get the gears working.
And again, you could just write her, say you listened to the radio interview on HIAC Talk Radio, and it
the
is...
Hell, she said the S word.
Yeah, true. But that's patientwisdom@melzerich.com. And again, that is MelzerichE.com. And you can also check out our blog at patientwisdom.wordpress.com. But Dan, wow, that was really enlightening.
Yeah, it was, and it's a lot of information, and what I was thinking about is when you read her book, you can also listen to this episode, and then she expands on a lot of things. And, like I said, every little bit helps.
It really does. Now just a little bit of general house cleaning. Coming up on Wednesday, Dan, we're going to have the Godfather of Hardcore, Joel Goodhart. He will be joining us promptly at 9:30.
Probably not, but that's fine.
Or maybe 10 o'clock, knowing him. We're also going to have our second interview with MMA fighter It's his second fight coming up, his second pro fight, let me make that clear, at Resorts Atlantic City, I do believe.
Ooh!
Jeremy
oi, oi.
Will be joining us as well. And an up-and-comer on the independent scene, Major McClendon. He currently works for DWF. He works for Beast. So we have another packed show there. The Joel Goodhart interview is something I'm looking forward to.
Whoever's listening, if you're a wrestling fan or just a fan of us because we're so good, this interview, the wealth of information and memories coming from this guy. Sit back and get ready.
I really want to go into delve into the original TWA, because I think that was really something that started a revolution. Without TWA, there would be no ECW.
TWA, there would be no CZW or a lot of the independents that are on the scene right now.
That's true. And when you say that too, just think of this. The original Ringmaster School that he opened up trained both Mike Tartaglia as a wrestler at the time. Mike Tartaglia, the owner of ECWA. He was known as Mike Bruno in the old TWA. He was the hitman, Michael Bruno. But he was trained at the Ringmaster School, and so was Joe Zanoli, the matchmaker of ECWA. So when you say a lot of these promotions wouldn't be around, well, there you go.
They literally would not be around because some schmuck like Artemis would be running it. Sorry, I had to get that in.
But yes, Dan, I know we want to get out of here. I love these special episodes. I'm not sure when the next one is or what the topic will be, but
just going to talk about some dude about some stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it was really a great episode. And again, don't forget you can write at patientwisdom@melzerick.com and get a free copy of that book that we discussed here tonight. So if you want your own copy, go ahead and
email her, folks. Get a copy.
Dan, if you don't have anything else, I think we're out of here.
No, you're not bored.
Okay. Everybody, we'll see you next Wednesday. Joel Goodhart will be on the program.
Rock on.